How do you cope if you're dealing with breast cancer in the public eye? I was shocked when Amy Dowden, star of the hit TV shows Strictly Come Dancing and Dare to Dance, revealed on social media that she'd been diagnosed with breast cancer just weeks after her wedding. She's helped so many of us by sharing her story in the spotlight, and I can't wait to tell her how thankful you are for everything she's doing to raise awareness. Welcome back to season two of So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. So I'm really excited to tell you that we're starting season two of So Now I've Got Breast Cancer with a bit of a sparkle. To anyone listening in the UK, you'll know I mean that in more ways than one. Amy Dowden is one of the highest ranked ballroom and Latin American dancers in the country, and she's a star of the Saturday night blockbuster TV show Strictly Come Dancing. Now, don't tell anyone, but she's always been my favourite. Not only is Amy brilliant on the dance floor, but she's from Caerphilly in Wales, and I used to work in South Wales as a junior doctor. Like many of you listening today, I was so angry and sad when she told us that she had breast cancer in May last year at the age of 32. And she's bravely shared each step of her journey, and I'm thrilled that Amy is joining me today to talk about her diagnosis, dealing with breast cancer in public, and of course, her dancing. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Liz. And do you know what? You sent me your book, didn't you, when I got diagnosed?
I did.
I read it, but it was so useful. And at the time, you're giving so much information, but it was so useful because I remember just before my appointment about my reconstruction, I knew which checklist to go in and to, you know, and then I could go in and ask the questions because you broke it down and so clearly for me. And then starting chemo and, you know, I read the whole book, but I used to go back to it when I was entering certain, you know, chapters myself of my journey. And it was just so useful and the tips and then even just understanding maybe a little bit more other than just from the doctor's terminology, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's weird. I wrote a book that I hope no one ever has to buy, but I'm so glad it was able to help you get through. Thank you so much. But I wanted to start at the very beginning with the dancing. Because I'd love to know how you got into it in the first place.
Oh, so I was on holidays at my granddad's caravan in Cornwall. And it was my birthday. And there was a little disco competition going on in the clubhouse for the children in the evening. So I managed to persuade my twin sister, you know, not to do a barbecue on the beach, but to go and into this dance competition. I'd never danced before. And I got up, I had a massive birthday badge on. And, you know, I flew some shapes or whatever, but I loved it. I loved the attention, the spotlights. I won. I had a medallion that I showed everyone for the rest of the holiday. And then I just begged my parents then the entire holiday to take me dancing. And then when we got back, they took my twin sister and I. And that was it. I was hooked. And yeah, it took over my life then, really. Yeah, dancing just, yeah, it's me. It's who I am.
It's just amazing. I wish my husband danced more because I do miss it. I used to do very bad stuff at university. But you didn't have the easiest ride as a child either, did you? Because you were diagnosed with Crohn's disease.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with Crohn's when I was 19, but I suffered from the age of 11. And I went, you know, eight long, tedious years before being diagnosed. And it was tough. And, you know, I still have tough days with my Crohn's disease. You know, I've got it mostly under control, which is great. But that is something I will live with forever because it's a chronic condition. It's affected me in many ways, and even my development for my dancing, it took me longer to get where I needed to be. But you know what, it was even more rewarding when I did achieve my goals. And it's a debilitating illness which so many people suffer with, and I try to do my best to raise awareness because it's something people don't want to talk about. They don't want to talk about get some poo. And
no,
I guess when I was growing up as a teenager, I actually never knew of anybody in the public eye who spoke out about it. And I think if they did, they would have helped me and explained to my friends, that's what I've got, or I wouldn't have felt alone, or I would have felt even, oh yeah, they've done it, I can achieve my dreams too. So after being on Strictly for two seasons. I then spoke out about it and I'm now a Pride ambassador for Crimson Flightish UK, and I try to do as much as I can to raise awareness, speak to others, and hopefully to help one day find a cure.
Now, before we get to all the questions I've had from my listeners and followers, I just wanted to share how much love there is for you out there. Karen Sanderson said, "You're an inspiring woman, and I hope, Amy, you can feel the love and support you have." Rachel just said, "Please tell her we love her, and we can't wait to see her back on the dance floor." Another lady said that your documentary about Crohn's has already made you a hero in her eyes, but your continuing presence during your cancer treatment has been another level. You are an inspiration. So many people saying thank you for sharing your story about your breast cancer and raising awareness. They just think you're bloody brilliant.
Well,
so let's talk about when your life changed forever in May last year.
Yeah, so I found a lump. I had done the Copperfield trek the year before, and you know, knew how important it was to get check-ins. So doing that trek actually saved my life. Wow. Because then I started to check myself. So I was in the shower. I was in a tiny little shower cubicle in Blackpool in a B&B because I was up there with my dance school, and they were competing all day on the Saturday and Sunday, and we were flying off on honeymoon on Monday. And I got in this tiny little shower and just thought, oh, I've checked myself this month, and I found a lump. And, you know, I was crazy busy because we were, you know, I had hair and makeup and I'd be in the ballroom from 9 o'clock with all the kids.
Oh.
And I thought, just come off my period. Maybe it's, you know, a cyst, you know, you never know. Like,
yeah.
Just thought, I'll keep an eye on that. But then it lingered in the back of my mind all day. And got home, showered before we flew off, checked it again. Nope, it's still there. And I don't know, I just had this gut feeling. I didn't feel good. You go into Google, you look at where physicians should be, you know, if it is cancer, you know, all the things you shouldn't do.
Yeah. I didn't too.
You know, I'm at the airport, and every time my husband's not looking, I'm on my phone Googling. And we flew off to the Maldives, and every day then, you know, you put suntan cream lotion on, body lotion at night. And all I could do is just kept feeling it, and I just kept thinking it's getting bigger, you know, and it probably wasn't, but in my mind. And the whole time it was just fixated in the back of my head. And then I was just thinking, I haven't got time for this. I've got, when I get back, my brother's wedding straight away. So I was working for the King's coronation. Then I had a dance show. I was filming my TV series, Dirty Dance. And then Strictly, I was even looking at my diary going, how am I even going to fit in a GP appointment? Like, I was thinking, I haven't got time for this. As silly as it is, because you can't do anything about your health. And I get back, and the first few days are crazy busy. And I think I just didn't want to face it before my brother's wedding.
Yeah.
You know, we were so looking forward to it. Like me, his wedding had to be postponed because of COVID.
Yeah.
So, but it was in the back of my mind the whole day, and seeing the family, and, you know, and holding it in from everybody. And from there, then I did the King's coronation, which I presented live from Cardiff. And I had to interview the King's harpist. And she has just got over breast cancer. And
wow.
I just thought, this is telling me. I just felt that was a message. But, you know, probably coincidence, but I just felt I must ring it. So the following morning, I rang my GP, said I found a lump. The GP rang me straight back. She said, don't worry, can you come today? And I was like, oh, I'm actually on my way to Blackpool to judge the world championship.
Too busy.
Yeah. And she was like, right, okay, what about tomorrow? So I traveled from Blackpool, went home, and I went in the morning. She said, yeah, I can fight the lump. And I could tell, like, my GP knows me really well because, you know, the nurse of my Crohn's. And she was relaxed to begin with and probably thought, you know, my age, what have you. Really not worried. She then measured it, and she felt it. She measured it, and I could tell her tone changed. In front of me, it rang and said, I want emergency referral. And that's when it all got going, really. And that's when I knew the whole time I had this gut feeling.
Yeah.
I didn't tell my husband. So I didn't want to worry anybody if it wasn't going to be anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that completely.
I guess I was still trying to process it as well myself. So they did an ultrasound, they found two tumours at that time, and I could just tell, just within the room, and then all of a sudden a breast nurse comes in, so we're going to do some biopsies,
you know,
call somebody, And I said, no, what for somebody? And then she just then said, I think we need somebody hearing me. And then, yeah, I knew. And then we called my husband then, you know, who had a massive shock. And they couldn't confirm, because obviously only the biopsies ever really confirm, don't they, that it is
cancer.
And, you know, my husband stayed never positive, like, well, we don't actually know. And I was
mine
saying,
was
you
the
know,
same. You'll be fine. Everything's going to be okay.
You're going to be absolutely fine. And we've just gone through breast cancer with one of our closest friends, Jenny. And in my head, I said, well, how can this be? Like, the two of us, you know. And, you know, we got on the phone to Jenny, and she was, like, really positive. And we were, again, going away the following day to a dance competition, stoked with all our teens. And I can remember being so sore from the biopsies.
Yeah.
And all the kids coming up and running and hugging. I was like, you know, trying to keep a smile on my face. But actually, all the parents at my dance was like, something's up with Amy. What's, you know, asking me, is it crows? That everybody knew something was wrong with me.
Yeah.
And then I went off and started filming my TV show, Dare to Dance. And the producer then was like, he even called the exec saying, I don't know what's up, but something's really wrong with Amy. And then, you know, a couple of days later. So obviously I was trying to put on a smile and trying to be
hard,
positive.
Isn't it?
And I guess, you know, every spare second you're Googling and you're researching.
Yes, middle of the night.
I think it was like 10 days for the biopsy to come back. And then, you know, we were told, you know, it's breast cancer.
How hard was it for you to tell your mum? Because she's had breast cancer herself, hasn't she?
Yeah, so I had the news, and because basically they rang me and said, can you come into the hospital? I was like, no, I'm in London. I'm in London Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. They were like, we really need to come in here. Can you come in tomorrow? And I was like, no. Like, you know, because I'm so busy. And I think I didn't want to face it.
Yeah.
They was like, do we need you to come in? Where are you? And I just said, I'm with my husband. And, you know, put him on the phone. And they just said, you need to come in. We're really sorry. It's not the news you want to hear. And I can remember just then ringing my sister, screaming, crying, saying it's cancer. Mum and Dad were on holiday, so they didn't know what to do. Rebecca, bless her, she's a midwife. And probably in hindsight, I should never have rang in, knowing then that she had a two-hour journey to me. And of course, the first thing she was going to do was get in the car and travel to me.
Yeah.
And I should never have done that. But I think it was just a panic. My twin sister and I are incredibly close. We're best
You'd
friends
have done it
as well as sisters. Yeah. Like, she was the first person I wanted to tell. So I think Ben was just in shock. And my sister got in the car. She came straight to me. We traveled back from London, and, you know, Bethesda and I had a really good cry. And then some of my closest friends come around. Jenny, who's had cancer. Carla, Chris, Brad, Katie. There's a little group, and we were Jen's kind of rocks chemo group, I guess, during her treatment. And we're all really close friends. Everyone was sensing something wasn't right anyway. And that the back of the bed, and I traveled back from London, and they'd all come round. And I think together we all had a good cry, and somebody opened a bottle of Prosecco and was just trying to be there for Ben and Di. Does that make sense? And trying to be positive.
Yeah, completely. Like, yeah.
And then I knew I had to tell my parents, and they were on holidays. And so the following morning, I knew I couldn't do it alone. And at first I thought, Rebecca, you're going to have to tell them. And Rebecca just called my dad and my mum and just said, where are you? And he said, oh, we're just walking back to the car. And makes sense. What's the matter, Rebecca? You know, tell us now, what's up? And she was like, no, and you, I can't tell you now. Just get back in the car and, you know, give me a call. And I think they rushed to the car, and I just think they were so worried. They knew something was seriously wrong. And they knew Rebecca was with me, and they knew that shouldn't have been the case. They didn't think it was cancer, but I think they bought me forward to my Crohn's disease. Or they were worried my brother was on his honeymoon. So then they called Bex and I straight back, and you know, we told them, and that was really hard. And my mum says it was like hard to hear, and that her daughter has cancer. So when, you know, she had cancer, my mum's had cancer twice. She's had thyroid cancer and breast cancer. And obviously they were so upset, and they just wanted to be with me. And obviously, again, came straight to me. But yeah, it was really tough. But also, like, for me, knowing that my mum's been through it, and out the other side is also promising. My mum was laid down, and that's when we thought, then I must carry the BRCA gene.
Yeah.
I don't. So I was worrying, and then I was worried for my twin sister then, because if I carried the BRCA gene,
she could.
And actually, like, we wanted to speak to my mum before going to the appointment with the doc, you know, to know certain questions to ask. So my sister came with Ben and I, because my sister having a medical background.
Yeah, and you don't remember anything when you've been in that room. You need someone else to tell you, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You've made the decision to go public during your treatment, the surgery, the chemotherapy, and some of my listeners said they struggled to even tell their best friend. What made you decide to share this very private, traumatic journey with your followers?
It was a tough one, and we did keep it in house for a little while, within family and friends. I even did a dance show, and nobody knew. Then I performed, and my kids from the studio with us as well. When I was announced back on Strictly, I had cancer, obviously a lot of shows, a lot of things. And I have a dance group full of little girls and boys. I'm scared that the news was going to get out because I'm in the public eye. And I never wanted them to hear from a friend in school. Or a lot of my older children were doing their GCSEs and A-levels. And I didn't want them to all of a sudden, you know, be going into an exam and then read online that their dance teacher has cancer. Or I just felt like, I think it was going to come out, and I wanted to be in control of it.
Yeah, exactly. But also, that control the story. Yeah.
Yes. And it was the only thing I felt I was in control of. And I knew the impact of speaking out about my Crohn's disease and what that have done and the community of friends I have made from that. And I thought, you know, this could be the case for me during my breast cancer journey. And, you know, hopefully I can help others, because if I wasn't checking my chest, then, you know, I wouldn't have found my cancer. And that could be the case for so many out there, because you don't get mammograms until you're in your 50s. And then I don't think it's on the radar for so many of my friends, like, Amy, you never check, like, if it wasn't for you. And now they're checking all the time.
I was a consultant breast surgeon, and I never checked my breasts until I was 40 and I got breast cancer.
Wow.
We're just not taught it, are we?
We aren't. And then it scared me when my friends were saying, I don't check. And even my friend has just been diagnosed. She lives in Canada. She's a fantastic ballroom dancer in the finals of the world, black ball, everything.
Wow.
And she's 30. She did a big post last night online saying, if it wasn't for Amy, I would never. So for me, it's really rewarding. Not rewarding that she's going through it, but, you know, I just think, well, she would never have found it otherwise.
Yeah.
And I just thought, and I've always been very open and honest, and what you see is what you get with me. So, I'd made the decision right of going to announce it. And it, you know, it was absolutely the right thing to do. Like, I made so many friends online from it, and people who were going through it. And I'll never forget the one message, and she said, I'm exactly the same age as you. I'm just about to start, have surgery. I'm going through fertility treatment too. You speaking out, I no longer feel alone. And I was like, you've made me not feel alone too. And like, I used to, you know, be up all night messaging people who were going through, who had met online, who were also on the steroids and couldn't sleep, or, you know, me going into chemo, asking her so many questions, and, you know, about the hair and I'm just so grateful for that. But also, looking back, there's no way I would have got away with it not coming out to the public. I'm in the public eye. I was announced back on Strictly. I would not have been present at Strictly at the start. So people would have been asking why. My dance kids would have been, the studio would have been wondering why. And then I would have lost my hair. So everybody would have, there's no way I would have got through this journey without the public. And the people online, you know, so many, there's 99% of positive people. And there's 1% of people going, why are you trying to seek attention?
No, yeah, not. Like, we ignore them.
Yeah, go in a quite really deal with it like everybody else is with it. Actually, there's no textbook how to deal with it.
Nope.
And actually, you know, I look now and I just see the positives and how many people have started checking because of me.
Yeah.
But also, it allowed this time to tell the dance school parents, and for them to be able to tell the children at my dance school before it went to press, you know, and for them to be able to, you know, understand and to deal with it. And we were in control of everything.
Yeah. How incredible for you to be thinking about how they would feel when you're going through it yourself.
Yep,
I have to say, so many of my listeners have said the same. Thank you for talking about it. I'm not alone. You're inspiring. I can go through it. It's just incredible.
But you guys have also helped me, because if I hadn't spoken out about it, you would have said your book. Do you know what I mean? Which helped me, which helped my mum, you know, and it was on the side and people would come in and read it. So honestly, like so many of your listeners have helped me, all the love I've received, all the comments, all the advice. I'd sometimes put like a question thing on my Instagram. I'm going through this, any advice? And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't speak out. And
that's the most incredible community.
Yes. Yeah. Honestly, definitely. It really got me through it, and I didn't feel alone. And also in the back of my mind was always, you know, when you're in a breast unit, I was being recognized. It was only matter of time. Yeah.
When I was going in for my last recurrence and I was sat there and think, oh God, people recognize me and I don't want them to know everything's fine. It's really, really hard. We both had chemo, but I got off a little bit easier than you did. You did not have an easy time during chemo, did you?
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, I had sepsis after my first one. And I had clots after my second one. And then I lost my hair, which was the norm, which is really tough. And then after first chemo, I had neuropathy. And then I broke my foot. And then I found another blood clot on my lung.
Neuropathy is when you lose the feeling in your fingers and toes. And it's very, very common. But that means it's quite hard to walk and move when you can't feel the bottom of your feet. As a dancer, that must have been terrifying. So I lost it as a surgeon. Yeah. I couldn't feel my fingertips. I thought I'm never going to operate again. But for you as a dancer, losing the feeling in your feet.
And I lost the feeling in my fingers as well. It did come back. And it's come back in my feet, thankfully. But that was devastating. I just finished chemo. And 4 days later, I broke my foot. And it was this plan for me to do this fabulous group number on Strictly about my cancer journey. And that was really getting me through it all. And then another thing. And actually, I cried so much when I broke my foot. I was just like, please give me a break. And, you know, I just thought that's my independence for my driving, like dancing, getting my life back, you know, the build up to Christmas, shopping and everything. I was devastated. And then 2 weeks after that, then I was rushed back into hospital. I was coughing up blood and everything. And they found a blood clot on my lung. So I'm still injecting myself now for that. So I didn't have, you know, an easy ride through chemo. I don't think anyone does, but you know, there was a few chemo that I got through really well, and you know, I was able to go to Strictly, and I did some lovely like NTAs and Bright of Britain and some, you know, TV work, and that really helped me through. So to anybody who is about to start chemo, you know, it's not meant to break you; it's meant to help you. And that's what I say to everybody. Like, I've got a dear friend starting chemo today, and I've been on the phone to her, being like, you know, and she'd had a good cry this morning. I said, I cried going in, and I'm smiling from now, actually. And just remember, this soon will be a distant memory. So I don't want to scare anybody that's about to go through it.
I wanted to ask this. I had sepsis as well. It was a bank holiday, Friday night, payday. The last place you want to go is A&E. I did not have my infection bag packed because it wasn't going to happen to me. And suddenly, when you feel like shit, you're scrambling around. Did you have a bag packed when you were ill?
No, but what I will say, my parents were with me because they came up and stayed every chemotherapy. I never on a visit come Friday to Sunday night, just to help Ben and I out, really. But what I would say is my parents and Ben are very used to me being rushed into hospital with my Crohn's disease.
Of course.
So Ben, everyone says Ben is the most calmest person in this situation because he's been through it so many times with me. He knows exactly what to go and pack, what meds, you know, what to say to the ambulance crew. So I am very lucky, and not lucky because obviously I had to go through it, but lucky in the sense Ben knows exactly what to do. We have kind of like a certain backpack there already. And he knows
thank goodness.
Meds, everything like that. So brilliant. I was very lucky. And I already had a 37.7 temperature, and anything over 37.5 is dangerous. And I was, I think, 38, 30.
Yeah.
I was like above it. And I didn't realize, like, to anybody not going through chemo, that's not really a scary temperature. Take paracetamol and you're fine. But to anybody going through chemo, that could instantly change it a bit and turn into sepsis. I should have gone to the doctors really straight away, rang the red card, and I didn't. And I felt okay. So I was just like, I didn't expect to feel a lot worse. And it was my first chemo, so I didn't know how to feel. And then I ignored it. And then by Saturday night, I collapsed and I was rushed in, and so then I didn't take any chances after that then.
It's scary when you don't know what's meant to happen, isn't it?
No, yeah, and it's scary for those around you as well, you know, and going into hospital, being told, yes, she's got an infection, and, you know, putting her antibiotics, she's going to be fine. I think they said just full of virus. And then overnight it changed. And then in the morning when my parents rang, Ben rang. And they said, hang on, the doctor wants to speak to you. And Ben was like, the doctor wants to speak to us. Put the phone on loudspeak, my parents around. And then they said, we're treating a sepsis and a fluid blood clot on the lung. And they just went into panic mode, as you can imagine. And by the time they got to the hospital, I wasn't in my bed. I was in having a CT scan. And they were like, where's Amy? And they said, look, she's not responding. We've got intensive care team ready to assess her. You know, we think she's gone into septic shock. And my parents, my mum was like, I only left her about 3 o'clock this morning. Like, how quickly I'd, in a matter of hours, had deteriorated. It's quite scary. Like, you couldn't imagine, actually, had I gone to bed that night, what would have happened had I been home and woke up in the morning.
Really scary.
Yeah.
But I wanted to move on and talk about hair.
Yes.
Because I was in bits watching your friends and family cutting your hair off on Instagram. And I know when I lost my hair, how hard was it for you to lose your hair?
Oh, it was extremely hard. And I think I can remember crying the first morning when I, shred some hair and I couldn't brush it. The first woman friend was coming around, Carla, who's a hairdresser. And then she cut it and then she showed Ben how to brush it. So I couldn't brush it myself, the clumps coming out, and it was just upsetting me. So Ben every day would brush it and get rid of the clumps and hide it in a box so I wouldn't see. And I just kept going and didn't want to until I had quite a big ball patch here, and to the point where really it wasn't savable. And I can remember on a Saturday I just decided I couldn't cope anymore. I was dreading waking up and seeing it all on the pillow. I couldn't do anything with it anyway. You can't brush or style it, can you? And even a trail of hair, everywhere I went, there was a trail of hair. It was just another reminder. And contacted my friend Carla, and, she was like, she had cut our friend's hair, Jenny. She was like, ran me in tears. She found it really tough. And I was like, I'm going to cut it tomorrow. I'm going to find a fun way to do it. So then I then talked to her. She told my mum and dad. And I just said, right, we're going to go around Jenny's and we're going to do this in a fun way. And you're all going to cut it. And we're going to dance. And we're not going to let this be dead. I just felt I needed to take control. And I thought, right, I'm going to video this because what I thought was about videoing it would make me stronger. Try and put a big smile on my face.
Yeah.
But I also thought, and I might have the guts to be able to put her out there and help others going through it. But I wasn't always sure on that, because had you spoken to me 2 weeks before that, and Carla, my friend, always says this, she honestly thought there'd only be 2 or 3 people had ever seen me bald, because I was so paranoid about losing my hair, and I just so wouldn't let people see it. When I went to Strictly, the hair team would have to come upstairs and take in my hat off or my wig off to put their wig. I wouldn't have it done in front of everybody else because I wouldn't let them lot see my bald patches. I was so nobody saw it. It was something I wasn't comfortable about. And, I never even showed Diane, this is how bad it is. So to actually get that confidence to put it on social media was quite massive, to be honest with you, for me. And it was really tough, I'm not going to lie. As a dancer, it's taught me a lot because, you're in such an aesthetic sport and, it doesn't define who you are. I've had to learn that. And I think, it's put a different outlook on my life for the better. But, and it's still tough now. I wake up and sometimes I had to remember Ben getting his phone out when we were away recently and taking a picture of us. And it still shocked me now with my hair. But actually then coming out, showing everybody I'd done it and showing that bald can be beautiful and being brave and bald, again, helped me, give me the confidence. And again, the comments and the messages and the support, but also, hopefully what I've done for others. So, but my hair is going back. My eyelashes are back. I found the eyelashes really hard. But it's coming back. So I'm really grateful for that.
It's quite a nice bit when you start to recognise yourself again. But I wanted to say, the moment I saw you on Strictly without your wig, I jumped off the sofa cheering. Was it a last minute decision or had you planned to do it?
I had not planned to do it. No, it was literally seconds before. And it was Diane telling me, I took her off, my headscarf off for the dress run, because my wig, they put my wig on and they were going to curl it and prep it. So to headscarf, and I had my headscarf on. It was a really hot day that day. It was like one of those random hot days we had in September, beginning of October, I can't remember. But it was that weekend we had like the heat wave in London. And with the Indian obviously put into menopause, I was getting terrible hot flushes as well. And so I can remember having this really hot flash and hot and like sweating. And first thing, I just took off my headscarf, and then nobody like ever looked at me, didn't see. And then Dan's like, "You look so beautiful. I love this look on you, Amy." I'm just like so positive. And then I just saw, and I just went and did it without my headscarf. And I, you know, recorded it, see how I looked, the terms and conditions, and the best I ever had to do it. Sent it to my friend, Jenny and Carla. And they both like were screaming and crying and going, "Oh my goodness, you've done it." I never thought. And I said, "Whoa, this is a new dress run. I'm not doing it for the live." And they were like, "Oh, okay, but you do decide, think what that do." And Carl was like, "I'm so proud of you, Nina. I never thought anybody like putting your video out this week, and now you're doing that." I was like, "Whoa, I'm wearing my wig tonight, and I've got this lovely dress." And then I went into the hair and makeup, and it goes, "Like, we don't need to get your wig on. You look so, you look better without the wig." And I was thinking, and I had a really good chat. And I went to production, and I was like, "I don't know whether I should do it, but the wig." Everyone's telling me, and he was like, "If you can, it's no pressure on us, but you know, whatever you feel comfortable, we think you look beautiful about." I did my makeup down, and everybody was telling me, and it was literally seconds before I thought, "I'm going to do it," you know. And I'm so glad I did, because even that week, even though I'd put a video online of me about hair, even when the postman would come to the door, I wouldn't go to the door without my hat on, or, you know, a headscarf on, or I wouldn't leave the front door. Like, but yet the whole kind of like online community had seen me, the papers had picked up on it, that I'd lost my hair, but it was weird. I still couldn't leave my front door. And then since doing that, I felt like, yeah, that worry was gone kind of thing. And hopefully I helped others as well. And hopefully I made it normal.
I've had so many listeners saying what a huge impact that moment had on them. Rachel Westwood, Louise Burton, so many saying thank you. And we had this lovely voice note from Nikki that I wanted to play for you.
So she announced her diagnosis literally 1 month to the day before I was diagnosed with mine. And then from the minute that she did share her, you know, awful news that none of us want, I was able to follow her, and it gave me strength. It made me realise it was doable. It made me realise that, you know, you could be positive and you could still smile and laugh and find the good wherever you could. And for that, I will be forever grateful to her for being so open. I think when people in her position use their platform in this sort of way, you know, it can't be celebrated enough. Because she won't just have helped me, she'll have helped thousands upon thousands of men and women dealing with breast cancer in itself or any other diagnosis of cancer that it could have been. But the way she carries herself, you know, appearing on Strictly with her bald head was just amazing. I remember watching her video and I shaved my hair, I think about 3 days later, and it just gave me that boost and that readiness to do it. And for that, you know, she has no idea who I am. But I will forever be grateful to her and how she's helped me deal with my journey. And I think she's just wonderful. So thank you, Amy.
Oh, thank you. And I'm sending so much love to you as well.
It's just amazing seeing someone going through what you're going through and knowing you're not alone.
Yeah. And I think that's what really helped me speaking out. I do think speaking is like a therapy.
Yeah.
Everyone deals with it your own way, and there's no right or wrong way, and just remember that and never be told how to deal with it. You know, your way is the right and correct way, but for me, speaking about it, it just helps me and helps me process it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask about was, every young woman who's diagnosed has to make tough decisions about their fertility.
Yeah.
And you were diagnosed just after your honeymoon. How hard was that to talk about?
That was really tough. So Ben already Googled, "I didn't know this," and realised that the fertility would be an issue. I didn't actually realise that. And all the Googling I'd done, that was something I did not come across. So that was a massive shock. To find that out, you know, in the next sentence that we've got cancer, and that to be the next, was just, yeah, really, really tough. And, you know, and then another journey that we were never expecting to have to go down. So I had my mastectomy, and 2 weeks later I started injecting myself with fertility treatment. hereditary, though. And I'm really grateful that the NHS offer that to every cancer patient and anybody going for chemo for both men and women. So yeah, I'm really lucky to, you know, and I know that's not always the case for everybody, because it all depends if you have to start chemo straight away or where you are in your cycle. There's not always an option, but I was very lucky that it was the right time for me. Otherwise, I would have missed that opportunity, but it was the right time in my cycle, and that we were able to retrieve eggs.
It's so tough, isn't it, when you're just at the start of a life with someone?
Yeah.
How hard has it been for Ben? Is he getting a lot of love and support? I know when I was diagnosed, I was like Christmas for me and cards and a flower. And it's like, what about my poor husband?
No, he is. And because we've just been on this journey with Jenny, I guess all my friends really knew. And I had an incredible friendship group, chemo club, who were there for Ben and I. Who'd come and sit downstairs and allow Ben, who's a dancer as well, to be able to go off and teach or be dropping off meals. And my parents would come every other weekend and they'd be like doing all the cleaning and washing and making foods. And, you know, all of Ben said he'd never known his towels be washed so much when they were around. Like everyone, you know, really come together. But Ben was just always mega positive of me, you know, wouldn't allow me to be negative and always only saw the positives. Even like sometimes would give me tough love when I'd speak, he'd hear me crying at night and in the bathroom about my hair loss. And he'd come and, you know, be saying to me, look, you're still a lucky one. Remember what the doctor said, you've got really good chance to cure. Some people don't get that and they would do anything. If it was losing their head, save their life or give them a few years. And sometimes I needed to hear that as well as, you know, the love. Like, he knew when the right time was to give me that tough love. That makes sense. And I needed it.
It does.
I guess nobody knows me better than Ben.
Yeah. He sounds like an incredible man to have in your back pocket.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, we know that you finished chemotherapy. Are you still having treatment at the moment or is everything finished?
No. So I'm obviously going to be having treatment once a month for 5 years, an injection. And I've had an MRI just gone, and I've just had my bone density scan and everything like that. So everything's looking really good and really positive. I've just had my boot off, my foot, which is great. But hopefully, I'll just be continuing now with the injection once every month. But yeah, just waiting for like all the results to come in. And but everything's looking really positive. Like my scan was really good just before Christmas on
brilliant.
Both my breasts, as in my new breast and my old one. So yeah, looking positive and looking forward to the future.
And there's a lot coming up, but I wanted to start with the Copperfield trek this summer.
Yes, so I'm trekking again with G. So 2 years ago when I did it, it was in the June in Pembrokeshire. The following year then when they were trekking was exactly the same week as me having surgery. So my mastectomy. And then this year, it will be the same week that I'm going to be trekking again back in Wales in Beacon Beacons. So I've kind of come full circle. Does that mean make sense from trekking to mastectomy to all in the same week? Now back and I just hope then I'll be trekking and, you know, trekking with a different feeling. And I'm coming full circle. But geez, incredible. The treks are amazing. I'm meeting so many amazing ladies and men and people walking for their friends or their family, and the whole motto behind it, again, people, and it's proof that it does work. Because look at me, I wouldn't have checked myself if it wasn't the Copperfield. So yeah, I'm really looking and really looking forward to going on the Copperfield trek.
Actually, one of our listeners is going on it as well, Mama J, and she's asked if you'll dance with her at the top of the Brecon Beacons.
Absolutely. So last time I used to get their group doing a little dance warm up at the beginning of the day. Yeah, and it'd be lots of dance chat. But that's me.
Love it. Now, we've had another cheeky voice note from Phil Anderson, who's had breast cancer himself, and he wanted to ask you this.
My question for Amy is, well, first, I want to say how amazing that she's publicly sharing her diagnosis and her progress. Not a lot of people would do that, especially in the public eye. So I think you're fantastic, you're inspirational. And the question is, would you dance with me to raise awareness for breast cancer in men and women?
Of course, yeah, we'll have to. Obviously, I'm really busy, but yeah, definitely would love to. Yeah,
well, I thought
pushing you really well.
Maybe he could end up on Dare to Dance. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because season 2 is coming soon, isn't it?
Yes. So Yeah, Phil, I'm sending you so much love and continue to do all you do for raising awareness. But data Dan, series 2 is coming out 1st of March, hopefully. We're still waiting for TBC done dates, but it'll definitely be coming in spring now. And this series, it's just amazing. And, the contributors taught me so much and helped me actually, because I'd started filming this and then I started my journey of breast cancer, and I continued to film it, and it was my before I'd started chemo, we had to get everything under wraps before, and it was my normality and it was my positivity, and these contributors all with their own story are just incredible, and their performances, they become dancers, they embrace the sparkles, the tan, the steps, the shoes, the blisters, the sore legs, the aching muscles. Yeah, they were my savior really throughout it all, and honestly, I cannot wait for everybody to see it. And yeah, fingers crossed, there's going to be a season 3. So yeah, Phil, if there's a season 3, I need you to inquire, because that could be our moment, hey. But yeah, I'm really, really excited for everybody to see this. Yeah, and do you know what? I was when I did the voiceover, I was at the back going, oh, I had my hair, and like I look so different on there. Reminded me of like the Amy I will be again. Do you know what I mean? With that spark in
Yeah.
my eye when I'm teaching people to dance or watching them perform. And it's just what I love most. Everything wrapped into one in that show. I get to choreograph, I get to teach. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, and I
Yeah.
get to share my love of dance with the nation. Just perfect.
Are we going to see you back on Strictly this year?
Yes, absolutely. That
Yay!
is the aim, to get me back on that dance floor. And yeah, back with my Strictly family. Yeah, cannot wait. And that's my aim for this year, to get myself as fit and healthy as I possibly can, to be back doing what I love. Hopefully as well, it will inspire anyone else going through, any treatment or anything like this. It doesn't even have to be cancer. That, look, if Amy can do it and get back on the dance floor, then it can get back there too. That's because
Yeah.
that's what I was doing. I kept looking back at, like, you were one of them. Like, I'd always be looking, seeing, like, oh, how quick did they get back on? And they just give me that hope, and you need it, don't you?
You really do.
Yeah, and I know that I need to make my dancing heart happy again, and yeah, I cannot wait.
Well, we're all cheering you on. And I just wanted to thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And before I let you go, have you got any words of wisdom for anyone listening who's just been diagnosed with breast cancer?
I told myself through this journey, this two path, that was one, don't get bitter, get better. And hopefully soon this will be a distance memory, and you'll have some low days, and that's okay. Do you know what I mean? I can't tell you how many low points I had, but don't forget, you're going to also have some amazing, high days, and days where you're feeling positive in yourself again. Surround yourself by the people you love most, and just every day, remember to be like, well done, and just remind yourself how strong you are and that you've got through this another day, and just embrace it. But don't be scared to go along with it, the all the emotions, and remember there's no right way to deal with it. How you're dealing with it, you are a champion. Well done.
Thank you so much, Amy. And I can't wait to see you back on the dance floor, glittering in sequins.
Thank you so much. That's obviously, of course, if Strictly will have me back.
Oh, they better.
Did you do they will?
That was Amy Dowden. And I don't know about you, but I've got a lump in my throat after listening to Amy's story. Every day, I wish there was a cure to stop women and men like you and me having to go through treatment. But Amy's positivity has filled me with hope. Despite all her setbacks, she's ploughing ahead, whether that's trekking for the charity Copperfeel in the summer or inspiring people to get off the sofa and learn to dance with her new TV show. And I'd love to know what Amy has inspired you to try. And on that note, it's time to introduce Donna Ashworth, our fabulous podcast poet. And I'm thrilled that Donna's back with us again. Each week, she'll read us a poem to help us reflect on the things we've heard. And here she is with one from her beautiful book, Wild Hope.
With your knowing, let us not talk of regaining our youth, of appearing unchanged. Let us talk instead of how we have weathered this stormy ride, how we have consumed life in all its splendour, the good, the bad, and each crazy step in between. Let us regale one another with scars and survival stories, pass those treasures down to all who may listen and thrive, as though the words breathe very life into their air-quenched lungs. We are not here to be still. We are here to break beautifully, again and again, into shards of shimmering dust to fall down beatifically on the generations beneath. Like a disco ball rainstorm of wisdom and learning, we must shine our light wildly. Let us not talk of regaining our youth when we have gained so much more with our years. Light up the world, my friends. Light up the world with your knowing.
Oh, wasn't that lovely? That was Donna Ashworth reading With Your Knowing from her book Wild Hope. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems, find out about today's guest Amy Dowden and her new TV show Dare to Dance, or just want to get in touch, you'll find all the details in the show notes. If you love the show, remember to leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, I'm going to answer all your breast surgery questions with the help of Dr. Anushka Chowdhury, a consultant breast surgeon. We're going to cover how you choose what surgery to have, do you need to have your healthy breast removed, and the pros and cons of reconstruction. So make sure you tune in.
I encourage people, even when I'm seeing them, to have a second opinion if they want. You're at the most vulnerable time in your life. If that interaction doesn't work for you, you need to ask. Please feel confident. You're not going to upset anyone. Not everyone is everyone's cup of tea. This is your time to get it right for you.
I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.